So our dear friend, Bishop John Spong, isn't he wonderful?
Yes.
We're always so blessed to have him here every year to begin our holiday service. He wrote in his very important book, Born of a Woman, is it literally probable that any first century man would have put his near-term pregnant wife on a donkey and forced her to ride side saddle for about 100 miles from Nazareth to Bethlehem? As one feminist scholar observed after reading this narrative, only a man who has never had a baby could have written that. Any legitimate biblical scholar knows that the Bible, which is actually a library of about 66 books, cannot possibly be infallible. There are too many things going on. Scripture is a recorded journey of a Middle Eastern nomadic people thousands of years ago trying to make sense of their lives and trying to make sense of their God. So what we have is a record of them trying to figure this thing called life out. Attempting to apply ancient stories and laws created for an unknown alien world to our needs today can't fully work. Susan Targus, who's in the choir, told me the other day that when she was in Catholic grade school, she told the nuns that the Bible stories couldn't be real, because all those animals couldn't go to the bathroom on Noah's Ark for 40 days. The nuns answered her by putting her on her knees for an hour on salt. And then making her sit in the corner with devil's horns. It's been said that a religion that doesn't make sense to a child cannot be a true religion. If a child is afraid of religion, that is not real spirituality. That's control. That's control. That's not real. Now, in Unity, we believe that the Bible is not a book of facts. It's not a historically accurate document. It wasn't written that way. It was written to be a book of spiritual truth. In Genesis, at least two different authors told two different stories in the same chapter. But they didn't care. They said, here's my story, and I'm following yours right after. It was about spiritual truth. They weren't writing history. They knew they weren't writing history. Here's my truth, they were saying. The Christmas story is quite a beautiful spiritual narrative, isn't it? It's gorgeous. But it's as far as factual as we can get. Think about it for a moment. A simple peasant teenage Mary is told by an angel one day, guess what? You're pregnant. And you're carrying the Son of God. Huh? Joseph, come here, honey. I have something to tell you. Well, then Joseph has a dream after, you know, thinking about dumping her. And he hears an angel say, she's right. By the way, Joseph was not old. You always see this picture of Joseph bent over with his long beard. 60-year-old Joseph with 15-year-old Mary. Oh, it's just not right. No, he wasn't old. He just disappears. We just figured that he just, you know, made transition somewhere along the line there. So when Mary was about 9 months along, as Jean Marie shared with us, Joseph walks about 100 miles to take a census with his wife riding on a donkey while she's having contractions. So in modern terms, I want you to think. How many people here have been pregnant? How many men have been with women who are pregnant? Around them anywhere? Okay, so think about this. Think you're 9 months pregnant and outside of Symphony Space is a horse waiting for you to take you to the Philadelphia Zoo 97 miles away. Get the picture? Well, first of all, Luke is incorrect about the census. There wasn't a census taken till the year 7. So he wasn't right there. And no one had to go back to where they came from to take a step. The whole world would have to make a big adjustment to do that. No, it's like today. Wherever you are, you take the census from where you are. And of course, the one responsible for our image of the nativity scene is, do you know who? St. Francis. He was the first one to come up with the nativity scene on Christmas Eve in 12-something. He set up a live scene in a cave halfway between Assisi and Rome, with people acting out the characters and live animals, the whole bit. The show was an instant success. Came right to Broadway, ran for a few years. And now it's at Radio City every year. But within 100 years, every single Italian church had to have some version of the nativity scene. But the actors and the animals were eventually replaced by statues. Happens for every actor. Eventually something happens. Cartoons come along or animation. Oh, gosh. Actors are always being thrown out of their work. Well, as I said, the greatness of any Bible story is in its underlying spiritual truth. So today we're focusing on Mary's story because there's just something about Mary that's always fascinated me. In fact, Mary is a rather minor character in all of the New Testament. The earliest New Testament writers we have is Paul, who doesn't really mention her at all, except to say in Galatians 4, but when the designated time has come, God sent forth his son, born of a woman. Born of a woman. A woman. A woman. After riding that ass all the way to Philadelphia, having contractions, all she gets from Paul is born of a woman? As our friend Sally Kemp would say, men. So the first gospel is written, was Mark, written around 70 CE. And Mary doesn't even make an entrance until the third act, chapter 3. There's no birth narrative in Mark at all. And she's not even mentioned by name the first time she comes up. Anybody remember what happened? Jesus was talking to his friends and somebody said, hey, Jesus, your mom and your brothers are outside. They want to know when you're coming home. Your mom. That's it. Not even a name. What did Jesus say? Never mind that. You're my mother and my brothers. You are. Forget her. Who is she? She said, I carried you 100 miles to Philly. And this is what I get. Then in the 6th chapter, she is given a name for the first time. Jesus was visiting home and speaking in his Nazarene gospel and synagogue. Someone in the middle of his talk started muttering to his friends, of which I'm very familiar. That happens a lot. The guy said, this is the carpenter, the son of Mary, brother of James, Joseph, Judas, and Simon, and aren't his sisters here too somewhere? So the first mention of Mary in all the Gospels was by some wise guy dissing her son. Wow. Matthew, writing even later, is the first to provide a miracle birth story. Jesus was fulfilling the Jewish Messiah promise from the Torah, according to Matthew. But unlike Luke, he has Jesus born in Bethlehem without the census or the donkey story. But instead, he gets very cool gifts, gold, frankincense, myrrh, from some guys called the Magi. He also has the whole Holy Family fleeing to Egypt, which we don't have in Luke. He's fleeing because of some paranoia on Herod's part that another king was just born and they all have to be killed. Very Cecil B. DeMille. Oh my gosh. And then we have the book of John. There is nothing about Mary. Nothing at all. Well, nothing about her giving birth. John 1, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word became flesh. That's it? That's the whole miracle birth? Became flesh. Okay. Okay. Wow. The only mentions of Mary and John were Mary nagging Jesus about the Cabernet running out. And then showing up at the very end of the cross. That's what John thought about Mary And that was the last book written about 90 to 100 AD. Wow. Now, with such a miracle like a virgin giving birth to God's son, you'd think Mark, John, and Paul would have had something to say about the event. Like, oh, we think there's something about Mary and her baby's daddy that you should know. But no, they don't, there's not a word about it. And in the other scenes from Mary's life, she, after the birth, she acts like she has no idea who this guy is, Jesus. She's totally baffled by him through the whole New Testament. As I mentioned, in Unity, we approach the Bible as a metaphor for our own spiritual journey. Every Bible character, every situation, everything that happens in the Bible is an inner journey. It's your journey toward your understanding, toward your acceptance of your fullness as a child of God, as a divine being yourself, as a conscious, holy being that we all came to be. So it's not important that Mary did or did not ride a donkey 100 miles, did or did not give birth in a pigsty, or have animals and wise men bowing and giving presents, going to Egypt to escape a crazy king, or telling shepherds on the graveyard shift to go see a baby in a barn. None of that matters. They're interesting stories, and they have underlying spiritual intent, but they're not the facts. What is important is getting the message out that no matter what you're going through in your life today, you are giving birth to your own powerful, beautiful, astonishing miracle if you just hang in there no matter what's going on or no matter what's happening. That as you focus on the power of God within you, your life is working. That you're allowing God in your life to guide you to wherever you need to go to receive the joy and the power and the love that you're looking for so your life can work better. As I mentioned last week, Mary represents the divine intuitive self that you are. Joseph is your inner wisdom, and when they come together, they birth your own Christ self. The manger is your heart, the quiet place, the simple, quiet place within you where your Christ, your God self, is being born over and over and over again. The inn is the world of opinions and erroneous thought about who you are and what you should be doing with your life. The angels are God's divine thoughts, always guiding you and revealing your next step if you are open and receptive to listening to that truth. Illogical though they may be to a world of limited ego and fear. The process of birthing our creative selves is not always easy. It's often really difficult, as we know. And that's what Mary's journey is to you and to me. You are here on the planet right now to create the most astonishing life possible. You're here to live your life as fully and out there as you can. For your success in life and as a gift to other people, producing holy, beautiful, healing, joyful, loving, and fun creations in whatever way you're led by God to do. Life is meant to be a great adventure. If your life is not fun, we're not fully embracing or fully accepting what God has waiting for us. If it isn't fun, you're playing it too safe. And as somebody once said, if you're not living on the edge, you're taking up too much space. So giving birth can be downright agonizing for those of you who have given birth to a baby or to an idea. You know how difficult that is, and yet it's all worth it. Giving birth can be really scary. Giving birth to a multi-million-dollar musical, or a souffle, or a novel, or a restaurant, or a healing with a new drug protocol. Giving birth to a new home, a new ministry, a new relationship can be anxiety-provoking and terrifying. But you came to the planet to do all that and more. The only one preventing the powerful and brilliant God self that you are from coming forth is you and me. I'm the only one preventing me from having the kind of life that I know that I can have. Thinking that Herod or no reservations at the inn or 100-mile donkey rides or sleeping with pigs has the power to take my joy away. It doesn't. Nothing has power to take your joy away unless you choose to give it away. That's the absolute truth. And that's really hard for us to wrap our minds around sometimes. But I want you to meditate on that today and say, the only one who has given my power away is me. No one can take it from me. But today I claim it and I take it back. I take back that power and I watch my life work the way that I want it to. So what you think, what you say, and what you do is creating the life you have now. What you thought, what you said, and what you did created your life up to this point. Are you going to take a new thought, a new idea, a new word, a new action to bring forth the good that you know that you can have? This is Advent Sunday, the fourth one of Advent, and it's the gift of joy. Joy may be the missing element in your life, preventing your success from happening. How much joy do you have in what you're doing, and how much joy have you been withholding? How much drudgery are you feeling right now rather than uplifting joy and that power to move you forward? For example, if you're focused on the pain of having to audition for your work and not on the joy of performing for even just the producer and or the director, then your God self is not shining. You're walking in there afraid and trembling and putting a bushel over your light, as Jesus said. The truth of the matter is you're not going for a job. You don't even know if there's a job available. It may be a union call that they have to do. And you're showing up thinking, oh my God, if I don't do well, if I do something wrong, I'm not going to get it. You have no idea. Your job is to go forth and be the light of the world. Your job is to be joy and perform for one or two or five people. That's what you're here to do. If you're focused on the pain of another blind date, and not in the joy of simply meeting another child of God, not thinking, oh, I'm going to meet my future husband or future wife, oh, dear God. Or, no, you're just going to meet someone. You don't know. If you're afraid, if you're putting your bushel over your light, then your God self is not present. If he or she is not the one, simply enjoy the meal, have a glass of wine, and pray. Or if you're in recovery, another ginger ale. If you're not celebrating every little progress in your healing with gratitude and joy, if all you're doing is complaining how awful it is, and there is a real healing process, a real birthing process with healing, I know. If we're complaining all the time, though, we're not letting the power of joy help release the disease, and the pain. Now, feeling sick or weak or in pain is hard. There's no doubt about it. It is not fun to go through that. But as Richard Bach wrote, argue for your limitations, and sure enough, they're yours. Say, this cannot be overcome. It's killing me. How many people here have said, my back is killing me. My knee is killing me. This headache will be the death of me. These are not affirmations that we make in Unity. Not here, anyway. So stop saying that. Bless your back, bless your head, bless your knee. Say, the healing power of God is here right now. It is coming forth. In the meantime, I can take an Advil. Whatever I need. Medication, meditation work very well together. We do what we need to go forward with the journey. Absolutely. Your merry, intuitive, divine self is waiting for you to stop making excuses, to stop arguing with God. I argue with God all the time, but now it's shorter. It used to be weeks and months. Now it's like a day. Hopefully it's just like a couple of minutes. Go, okay, all right, I've had my say. Now go do it, God. Move through me. And especially quit listening to what other people have to say about what you should do. Stop listening to them. I want you to take a look at their lives. Right? If they knew so much, they'd be too busy having a joyful life without telling you what to do. They don't know. They barely know their own lives. Say, thank you for sharing. I'm going out now. We have to move forward with a joyful anticipation of the unending good that God is revealing through your heart, not what other people are telling you is something you should or should not be doing. In his book, The Success Principles, Jack Canfield shares that trusting their intuition is one of the most common elements extraordinarily successful people have. That they follow their intuition when other people said, you're crazy, you're nuts, what are you doing? When Conrad Hilton, the founder of the Hilton Hotels, wanted to buy another corporation at auction, he secretly bid $165,000. He woke up the next morning and a figure was whispered to him by his inner voice as soon as he was awake. He heard $180,000. So he made a call, he changed the bid, and he won the auction, beating the next highest bidder that was under his by only $200. His intuition, his heart knew the truth, and he made $2 million on that sale. When your heart tells you the truth, listen and move on what you hear. I'm going to say, get on your ass and go to Philadelphia if you need to do that. Or get off it and do what you need to do. Canfield also shares about a woman named Madeline Belletta, who was praying for an answer to her ongoing fatigue. The healing wasn't happening. Nothing she tried was working. Finally, one day, she got quiet enough to hear her heart tell her something that was a complete surprise. She heard fresh royal jelly. She really didn't even know what that was. She investigated it, took it, and she found it was healing. Her whole body changed, and she found the healing that she was looking for because her heart said, here's what's right for you. But Spirit kept pushing her into a new direction, kept pushing her further about it. In prayer, she said, okay, I keep hearing something's going on. Is there something more about royal jelly that I need to do to help others as I've been healed? And she heard the voice say, start a business. Today, her company is called Be Alive, and it's a multi-million dollar success because she listened to her heart and moved forward with what she got. What's waiting to be birthed within you today that you know? So many people are going to say, well, what do you want to do in life? I don't know. The truth is you do. The fact of the matter is you have not been listening to your heart, or your heart's been telling you something and you've been ignoring it because you think you can't do it because you've been listening to Aunt Rose and Uncle Harry tell you, oh, no, oh, you can't do that. You're uncomfortable because it's been inside of you for years and decades, and it's really heavy, and you keep trying to put a lid on it, and it keeps popping up again. It's hard to carry your dream, your desire, your creative purpose in life because it comes from God, and God always wants to rise up. It wants to rise up, and you want to push it down again. The mental health field calls this chronic depression, anxiety, fear, panic attack. If you've gone through any of this, there's an indication that you're not letting your authentic heart tell you or lead you to where to go, what to do, and what to be. So today I invite you to let the joy of God move past your fears, move past your ideas of failure, and fully accept the birth of your God self is the only way your life is going to work 100%. When you let go and let God do the work, you're going to be amazed at how simple it is. Not always easy. Birth isn't easy. But how simple and how powerful and how joyful it is to let God bring forth this dream. So right now, I invite you to close your eyes. Go within. Go to your heart. Go to this manger within and allow the birth of love, power, success, abundance, healing, and joy take place right now. So today we're going to sing again, Silent Night, into our meditation time. So we'll sing it one more time, and then the second verse I invite you to hum it quietly to yourself as we enter into this manger of our heart where the Christ within you is being born right now. Breathe in. Let go. Thank you.
And now I invite you to hum it very silently, quietly to yourself. Breathe into her heart. Breathe into your heart. Feel the peace of God, the love of God, the safety, and the joy of spirit overflowing. I invite you in your mind's eye to go to the most peaceful place you've ever been. Is it a mountain? Is it a beach? A lake? Maybe just your own home, your own meditation chair, wherever that might be. I invite you to be there and feel the love of God, the light of God surrounding you, enfolding you, revealing to you that you are safe as you make this birth process come forth, as you allow it to come forth into your world. Breathe into your heart. If you're holding tension or pain anywhere, I invite you to breathe light into that area. Feel it warming you, relaxing you. Breathe that light, love, and peace into your heart as it flows forth to your entire body. Silent night, holy night. All around you as you're giving birth to the good of God. You know, there's no way that it can't come forth. It's guaranteed by Spirit that as you focus on God and allow God to do the work in joy and gratitude, it has to come forth. That is divine law. But we have to be clear about what it is that we are affirming, what we are praying about. So today, I invite you to hold this truth. The light of the indwelling Christ radiates joy and peace. I know what to do in life, and I am guided perfectly. Breathe that truth in. The light of the indwelling Christ radiates joy and peace. I know what to do in life, and I am guided perfectly. Breathe that in. Let that take hold. There's nothing missing from a child of God. You are the light of the world. We also know the love of the indwelling Christ permeates my mind, my soul, and my body. I am healed by God's power at this very moment. Let that healing love take hold. Know that no matter what anybody says, whatever doctors or the medical profession says about you and what you're going through, only God is the answer. So remember, the love of the indwelling Christ is permeating my mind, my soul, and my body. I am healed by God's power at this very moment. Let that take hold in every cell, every breath, every part of your being. We also know the joy of God is fully at work in your career and what you're doing every day. The love of God's unending ideas are flowing through me, bringing success and abundant good. I am prosperous. The joy of God's unending ideas flow through me, bringing success and abundance. I am prosperous. Breathe into your heart. Remember who you are. You are a spiritual being having a human experience. The light of God reveals the birth of my Christ power. It's happening right now. I am the love of God in the flesh. The light of God reveals the birth of my Christ power. It's happening now. I am the love of God in the flesh. Bring that truth into your heart, into your body, into your mind, and in the quiet of the manger within, allow Spirit to reveal it. Allow the birth of you to come forth right now.